Hello, Mark. How are you today?
I'm well.
Well, here we are again. Yet another podcast, as we keep telling ourselves every time we get together. And we're certainly ploughing along, and we've got a really good waiting list of great prospects to interview coming up. And in fact, this morning we're doing three, which is a change, yes.
I'm actually very nervous because I'm looking at the batteries and I've got other batteries backed up because we have had the experience of running out of battery, but let's not go there.
And last night, just as an aside, you and I went to a function in Geelong at the Geelong Football Club, which was for the Chamber of Commerce and the City of Greater Geelong for Small Business Month, which was really well attended, wasn't it?
It was well attended. Good speaker, the keynote speaker, who is Cherie...
Clonan.
She was excellent. Yeah. Interesting business that she runs. It was good.
That's right. And sitting there in that room at the Geelong Cat Stadium, I refuse to give it the other name. To me, it's still Cadinia Park. They had the lights on, and that ground looked magnificent last night. And there's that poor lonely stand down the end of the ground that we hope will be built by next year. Anyway, who have we got today, Mark?
So today we've got Alison Batten. Welcome, Alison.
Good morning. Thank you.
And Alison and I know each other through our Target days.
We do.
Alison was one of the exemplary buyers at Target when I was there. and been looking forward to having Alison along. So, Alison, where did it all begin? Where did you go to primary school?
I grew up in Belmont. My parents are actually still in the family home that I was taken home as a baby.
Oh, wow.
And the house that I grew up in was next to a primary school, which was Oberon Primary School. So I went to Oberon Primary School for my prep and grade 1 year. And then I was whisked off to the Philippines for 2 years with my parents. So my dad and mum came out from the UK in the 60s, and dad came out to work for Ford. So we got relocated to the Philippines for a couple of years. So I did my grade 2 and grade 3 years in the Philippines. So interesting start to childhood. And then came back to Oberon Primary School for grades 4, 5 and 6.
So did you speak Spanish?
No.
No, they all speak with American accents.
They do. And back then, obviously we're talking in the 70s, it was a very high American airbase dominance there as well. Yep. So very big American influence where we were at the time. So.
Have you been back?
I haven't. My parents have been back a number of times. We lived quite out of Manila, so we were about 3 hours out of Manila in a place called Mara Valley. So it was a very remote area. We lived in a compound. I still have very vivid memories. I was sort of 8, 9 at the time, 7.
Good memories. So you then came back to Australia.
Yep.
So what was your first job?
My first job was at a chain called Food Plus. No longer exists. Yep. But Food Plus was one of the first convenience stores at the time, and it was in Belmont. The building is still there and operated under a different title, obviously. And I've always been a very determined worker, very determined to succeed and have my own money. So I started as soon as I could, which was, I think, back then about 14 years and nine months.
That's interesting. You're not the first interview we've had where they said, my first job was at 14 and 9 months.
Yeah. Or they said, we are 14 and 9 months, but didn't have a birth certificate to prove it.
Yeah. So that job lasted about 6 or 7 months, and then I relocated because of the hours I was having to work through till midnight, which at that age was quite challenging. So I relocated to back then Safeway down in Highton, and that started me on a very long career with Safeway / Woolworths in the early days, where I started as a checkout operator, and when I left, did a bit of travel, and when I came back from travelling broke in my 20s, I went back to Safeway and knocked on the door and said, okay, I'm back. And I ended up then there as front-end manager. I was doing all of the payroll, and I was the team or the store trainer as well, so I did all of the staff training.
And in those days, Woolies and Target and those guys did fantastic in-house training. So
yeah, it was an interesting time. So I remember it quite well, obviously.
That's excellent. Yeah. So what led you to buying? How did you get into that?
Yeah, it's an interesting. It was an interesting course. So my career has sort of been a journey that wasn't planned necessarily. So as I mentioned, when I finished school, I went to the Gordon TAFE and I did a screen print and graphic design course. So I'd always imagined myself in the art area. Originally, I was looking at doing industrial design. It was something that I always felt was my strength. And I went overseas after doing that course and came back naturally with no money. And so I jumped into the retail job. And from Safeway, there came became an opportunity for a role with another company that no longer exists, which was World for Kids. And World for Kids, which used to be in the Officeworks building in Mallop Street, was basically it was a big box retailer for toys, and it was set up by the Colesmeyer Group at the time to counteract Toys R Us coming into the market. So I put my hand up for that one. They were offering management roles, and I ended up landing the front end manager role. And when I left that business 3 years later, having been part of the team that opened the shop from a shell and dirt on the ground to closing the store down, I was acting store manager. So when that happened, I was asked to, we were given two choices basically by Colesmeyer, which was this before Coles Group broke out. We could either go back to Kmart. Now, Kmart back then in the 80s was not the Kmart of today, or the 90s actually, was not the Kmart of today. It was quite a lot less. And I had greater aspirations than to just work on the shop floor of Kmart. And then the other option we got was we could become a team member for Officeworks. And back then, again, Officeworks was quite a small business. So I decided, no, I would do something different. And at the time, Target was advertising a number of roles in their advertising department. And it was back in the days when in the advertising department they used to sketch up the actual catalogues. So I applied for that job and went along. And you'll remember Campbell Jones. Yep. I was interviewed by Campbell. And basically, they said, no, you're not right for this job, which deep down I actually knew I wasn't right for the job either. But they said, we actually think you would be fantastic in buying. We've got trainee buyer roles going. Would you be interested in applying? So I naturally said I needed a job. I didn't want to do what I was being offered. So I said, absolutely, I'll apply.
No, sorry to interrupt, but there's a sliding door.
Well, I was just thinking that. We talk a lot about sort of sliding door moments where people go one pivot. Way and something happens and they pivot away and something happens and that's yours. You go for one job and then suddenly your life changes.
Well, absolutely.
Another interesting point there, and I unfortunately those listening to this can't see it, but I'm going to ask Alison to turn around and look at my wall, and there is
Noddy soft drinks.
There is a banner that goes on thing on windows, but that was hand done.
Yep.
So that goes back to your...
Exactly.
What do you call it?
Screen printing and graphic design was where I started, yes.
And it's amazing at the TAFE, and we heard a bit of this last night by the head of the Gordon TAFE about what they offer, but so many people we come across in this region who went to the Gordon TAFE.
Yep.
That, by the way, is screen printed.
Is it?
Yep. It's hand designed and screen printed.
So what was your first buying role then?
I landed the buying role and I ended up as a trainee buyer in kidswear. And so I spent a number of years in the kidswear buying division learning the ropes, and, you know, Target had a brilliant, brilliant education program for buyers, probably one of the best in the world, I believe. And I think from a grounding of business acumen, what we learned back then was just incredible from that company.
And it's interesting too, lots of folk that we speak to who started their lives with a big organisation such as a Target or the banks and got this unbelievably good training that doesn't seem to happen today. It seems to have been training's an expense, we'll do it when we have to, as opposed to this is setting the business up for the future. Yeah. And hence you get that brilliant training.
Mark, that was the days of cadetships.
Yeah.
Of course, that's what that was all about.
It was.
Yeah, I did a cadetship, not here in the UK. In fact, I went to the UK for 3 years because I was offered a cadetship in an engineering company who we bought machinery from back here in Australia. And everybody did cadetships. I had mates who went to Meyer.
It's sort of missing, isn't it?
It is. And it was similar. It was a similar to a cadetship because ultimately you were attached to a buyer. I used to say to my buyers, "I'm just your shadow. You're stuck with me," because you'd follow them everywhere. You did everything with them, but you had no responsibility. They were still the ones responsible and accountable.
Learnt.
But you learnt on the job. You got all of the rubbish jobs as well. But that's how you learn.
Yeah,
that's how
give the trainee the crap jobs. Yeah. Doing the buying plan.
Ellison. Following on from a lot of that, you really your reputation now is in retail strategies and supply chain. Says he, ready.
A bit of everything, actually.
And in recent times, you've been connected to Reject Shop, yes. NQR, and Cheapest Chips.
Yes.
Now the reason I bring that up is that right now we're hearing about the economy taking a dive. What do you see happening out there in retail at the moment?
It's really tough.
Yeah.
So we've seen a real real shift, and obviously we're going into report season at the moment, and I think you'll see a lot of the listed companies, retailers, really coming out with challenging numbers. There's been a significant shift in the last probably 12 months, but particularly in the last 6 months. So a lot of retailers were still talking about relatively positive numbers going into Christmas, but there has been a definite swing and you know, as you see the tightening of the impacts of interest rates on consumers, and the fact that, you know, a lot of these fixed rate mortgages are coming off, there are a lot of people that are actually really starting to question their disposable spend and, do I actually need that that top or that brand new plasma TV sort of thing? So
just out of interest, on Tuesday I had to go to a meeting in Melbourne, and afterwards I thought, I'll go for a walk. I haven't sort of been in the centre of Melbourne for many months. And so I walked all the way up Bourke Street, up to the top end, and then I went into Meijer and walked through Meijer. There was no one there. And the Mel or Mall or whatever they call it, it was just buskers belting up music to blow your head off. And people weren't there, and then counting the empty shops. So now that's an aftermath of COVID, I know.
It is, yeah.
But it's occurred to me you've got these, and out the back there's the Emporium and Melbourne Central, all full of stock.
Mm-hmm.
Now, they're not going to sell that stock in the short term. In fact, it's going into next season's already.
Mm.
So it worries me that there will be a significant downturn. But we've seen it all before, I know, but it's not good right now. I don't think it's good from what I can see.
No, and, you know, it's interesting because you've sort of got, and particularly in the CBD areas as well, you've got the challenges, or they've got the challenges of getting staff back into the offices. So where, you know, it was a bustling area of people spending money over their lunch breaks, and that they're missing that that side of things. But the sales are a lot heavier. There are a lot of retailers coming out saying, you know, they're heavy in stock. You can see it just in the discounting that's going on. So, you know, there was a shift away from those really heavy discounts, discount upon discount upon discount, but you're certainly seeing it at the moment in the market. It's there.
And if I think back to early days in my retail career, I remember somebody we won't name who actually boxed up seasons of stock and put them in warehouses. Wasn't Target, but they would keep the stock there because they didn't want to reduce it because it would cause them all sorts of issues. So we're coming back in that sort of cycle again.
We recently interviewed Cameron down at Brown's Menswear, or Mr. Brown.
Mr. Brown's,
yes.
And so he and probably there's another one in the centre of the city, Elias, I think, Eddie Elias. And when we spoke to Cameron, we asked him what his best-selling item was, and he said it was suits, which took me by surprise. But do you think there is a family business in retail, clothing, men's retail, why are they surviving when everyone else is closing down? They're the questions I ask. Well, you're connected to the Mark. I know you've got a conflict of interest, but there is room for these niche retailers, and if they get it right, and they've made significant change, but what they've got to realise, they're not up against the big boys.
They're not.
They've got to understand where they are. Where are they positioned? Mm. And I think that's the secret to those smaller independents.
Yeah, absolutely, yeah. It is. And, you know, it's still that personal touch. So there was a big swing, particularly COVID actually, extended it relatively quickly with regards to online purchasing. And there's been a real shift back. So online sales went through the roof, obviously, through COVID. It was the only way we could get product. You're seeing a lot of retailers come back. So the likes of Eddie Elias and Browns is there's a personal touch to it, but they're also catering, I would say, to a portion of the market that's perhaps not as affected by all of the other economic issues that are going on around us at the moment with regards to inflation, with regards to impacts of interest rates. So they're actually probably more marketing to a more premium customer, if I could say it that way.
Well, when I around the corner from where I live here in Geelong West, we've got the clothing store that all the guys like me go to, Gazman. But it's interesting, since in the last 3 or 4 months, they've had a 25% off sale, and then they had a 40% sale. And I walked past there yesterday and they got a 50% off sale. Mm-hmm. Selected items, of course. You've got to read the fine print.
Yeah.
But that tells you that they're desperate to get rid of the stock they've got because they've got new stock coming.
They've got new stock coming. Yeah. It's the old challenge with retail. Yeah. You're always buying your stock, you know, 6, sometimes 9 months out and forecasting based on your actual, you know, sales at a particular point in time and expectations. If you're dropping your sales by 20%, you've still got to sell that stock at some point. So, yeah, now, challenging.
Mark, we should get on to the board process.
Well, before we do, I just because Alison's plays in the supply chain space and stuff, what do you see with lead times on stock, et cetera? It was interesting because we went to buy a couple of chairs yesterday and they said, it's about an 8 to 10 week delay. Mm. I said, okay. They rang yesterday and said, sorry, it's 18 weeks. And my wife said, that's the supply chain issues. And I, hang on, 18 weeks? Is that starting to become, is it still issues in the
supply chain? There are still issues in the supply chain, absolutely. It's improved a lot. And obviously prices have come down significantly too. So container pricing has been a big impact on pricing across all consumer goods over the last 18 months to 2 years. So we've seen a real shift in container prices coming down as China has opened up, and particularly when China ditched their zero policy on COVID, that did open up the market a lot. But there's a backlog. So what you're seeing now is companies trying to backfill, and I don't know if you're in the car interested in buying cars, but at the moment you can be up to 5 years. A friend of mine said she went to look for a RAV4 and she was told no, 5 years.
It'd be a whole new model by the time it arrives.
Exactly. Why would you bother?
If you walk out our front gate and look over, there's a big yard over there, yard full of cars.
Yeah.
Now, he's a European repair specialist. And I asked him the other day, I said, have you got too much work? He said, no. He said, those cars have been sitting there for weeks because we can't get parts.
Supply chain again.
We celebrated last week because we're able to get five of them out of the yard. And he said it's an enormous problem, and particularly with European cars, which he specialises in. So it's a long way to go. Yeah,
long way to go.
Go back to my question about boards, because you've now embarked on a career as a consultant, or you've been a successful consulting role for a while, but you've also got a board career. Do you want to talk a little bit about that?
Yes, I guess I'll just take it back a step. So when I finished up at having spent 17 years at Target, I finished up as one of the general managers heading up the ladies' wear buying division. Mm. And from there, when I left Target, I decided that I was going to take a really big, brave move and go into consulting, which was terrifying, to be honest with you. So I did that just on the grounds of that I really wanted to broaden my experience. And I had a narrowish, what I would call a narrow experience in terms of buying, planning, sourcing. So I jumped into consulting to try and broaden my knowledge base. And, you know, when you're a consultant, you take jobs that you need to take at the time. And what that did was lead me to working with a lot of quite a few businesses, family-owned businesses, small businesses, independents and startups. And that got me thinking, and actually, Bill, you recently said the same thing, I think it was in your podcast. It got me thinking about the impact of small business and the lack of governance around what how they're structured, and they don't always have the right, and even bigger businesses, to be honest with you, you'd be surprised. So
I'm not surprised.
No. So that sort of said to me, well, where to in the future? Do I always want to be working as an exec? And probably not. So I then went and did the company director's course at the AICD with a view of pivoting my career again into more of a director-based career, so a portfolio career with boards. So when I finished that course, I then embarked on a journey of trying to get myself onto a board, which is actually can be quite challenging, to be honest with you. It's not as easy as people Nope. make it out to be. But I was very lucky to get myself a position with as a non-executive director with Geelong Bank. And that has been a fabulous time for me, because it was a whole new industry. So not only was I embarking on a different type of role in terms of from a governance perspective and a non-executive director perspective, I was also doing it in an industry that I really had no background in at all. So I think, you know, one thing I would say is that from a director perspective, you are often bucketed based on your background. But it's not necessarily it shouldn't be the case, because most of the skills are transferable across many industries. So,
and you're also running the AICD Geelong?
I am, yes. So they've had a bit of a journey over the last couple of years, and we've just, we used to have a Geelong Regional Committee, AICD Geelong Regional Committee. That has now just been expanded. So it is now going to be Barwon South West, I think, new name. And that is picking up also right down through Warrnambool area as well. Mm. So to pick up a much more broader group of
people. Just go back to Geelong Bank for a minute. I noticed that, which didn't surprise me, and I thought, what a great idea. You joined the bank as an associate director.
Yes.
And then, so was that your internship or your... How do they work that program?
Yeah, we've actually just changed it, Bill, but that program was established when... So Geelong Bank was founded through Ford, so it used to be Ford Credit Co-op Society. We rebranded in 2018. And we've also gone through a fairly substantial board renewal, including rewriting our constitution, which I had the pleasure of doing for the bank. And... I've lost my train of thought.
Associate director.
Oh, associate. Yeah. Thank you. Sorry.
Right. No,
apologies.
That's right.
And the associate director role used to exist, but what they used to do was, because they were drawing from Ford employees at the time, you have to be a member to be within a credit co-op and within a customer-owned banking sector. They had this process of associate director. Yeah. Now that we have removed since we rewrote the constitution, because a lot of directors are not interested in going onto a board. You're not paid. You don't have really any voting rights. But in short, yes, it was my apprenticeship, and for me, it was actually a great opportunity, because I didn't understand, so I had time to actually really understand the sector. So yeah, it had its benefits.
Which rings a bell, because if you go back to our podcast, Mark, when we spoke about boards, and we have people always asking us, "How do I get on a board?" Well, that. Maybe some boards should consider, not-for-profits maybe would be a good mm-hmm. way, they should consider someone comes in and it's like your training wheels.
Mm.
Because if you're a director, you've got some serious issues to discuss and some decisions to make that have enormous liabilities.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Anyway, so I picked up on that and thought I'd need to ask and find out what that was about.
And it's interesting too, because... lots of people say, let's go down the non-executive director path, not realising exactly what it means
mm-hmm.
and how you need to structure yourself so that you don't sort of lose your family home if if things go pear-shaped.
Last night at that function we went to, the guy next to me said, "Oh, he's working with a family business and they want him to maybe go on the board," and all that. I think I talked him out of it very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
You know, and he had no idea about the liabilities and responsibilities.
And that's where I think the AICD and some of the training, it's not necessarily just the AICD Company Directors course, there are a number of other courses available to people that give you that understanding. Yeah. So it's really actually quite important if you're going to embark on a non-executive director career that you do understand the legalities that sit and the responsibilities that sit behind you. Certainly from my perspective, being part of, you know, a bank, there's huge responsibilities, and we're also obviously governed by APRA and ASIC, yep, as well. So in the current environment, it's quite interesting.
Good.
So where do you see Alison Batten in 5 years?
Oh, I could have another sliding door moment, Mark.
You never know.
You just never know. You never know.
Well, I can guarantee that will happen.
Absolutely yeah, will happen. Yeah. Look, I think 5 years from now, I would like to be sitting here with much more of a portfolio career as an executive director across a number of industries. So I'm particularly keen to again broaden my horizon. So I'd love to get into the agriculture section, for example. Health would be of interest to me as well. So I'm always one for striving for new experiences that's going to grow myself as well and challenge my thinking. So that's sort of my ultimate. I'll probably continue to do a bit of consulting as well. I do really enjoy working with small to medium businesses and helping them sort of revolutionise the way they're structured and the way they think. And
so coming in a full circle, how do they get in touch with you if people want to engage Alison Batten? What's your company name?
Florimay Consulting, which has a story to it as well. But if Alison Batten at florimayconsulting.com.au is probably the best way to get me.
Do as we all do, go straight to LinkedIn.
LinkedIn, you'll find me.
And put in Alison Batten and you'll get all the contact details are on
there. Absolutely.
Yeah.
Fantastic, yeah. Alison. Yeah. Lovely to chat.
Thank you.
I've
so
learned
much.
A bit about you that I didn't know, which is really good. And we'll proceed to get ready for our next interview.
And thank you for coming here, and I know you've got a busy day ahead of you.
Pleasure.
So thank you very much.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Yeah. Thank you.